Welcome back to the Swirl Suite, everybody. This week we are joined with the infamous Karen McNeil. She's an author, she's a speaker, she's a consultant, she is a true leader in wine, and she tells us all about the story of the Wine Bible and her new project in a digital form, Wine Speed. Enjoy, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell a friend. Cheers. Oh, and also, the show is a little out of order this week. We do a short conversation before the interview with Karen, and we do a short recap after. So stick around for the full episode. Let us know what you think. Cheers.
Welcome to the Swirl Suite, everyone. We are here today. We're going to have a little special guest for you. We are all here today. We have Tanisha Hilling in the beautiful city of Paris. We got Sarita doing everything as she winds up in D.C. And we have the concierge of Maryland with us as well. So sit back, relax, grab something to drink, and enjoy the ride.
Thank you, Glynis. So I heard on my television today that the people of France are celebrating today because they made the opportunity to have an abortion, healthcare.
Wow.
Part of the healthcare rights. Were you able to see anything about that at all, Tanisha, today?
I mean, not necessarily. Like, I've seen articles and things about it. They've just enshrined it in the Constitution. So now that's something that, that they can't ever be taken away.
Wow.
So it's in the Constitution as a right. So
so progressive, unlike this free country.
I mean, you know, here we are, one step forward, two steps back. I mean, it happens. So they're excited about that. The farmers still burning hay in the streets.
I'm sorry, remind me of what that is?
Farmers are still upset because they feel like they don't have enough help from the government. Inflation is killing them. And so they are burning hay in the street, throwing manure on buildings, burning tires. It's a lot that they're turning signs upside down. They're doing farmer things. Driving their tractors in the middle of the street, blocking the roads.
So I guess my question for you is, has France historically given farmer subsidies, or are they just saying, I'm trying to figure out what they expect the government to do. So, is the government no longer using their produce and they're getting all imported produce?
There is more imported produce. They don't have, and the laws are very strict as it relates to farming. You know this as it relates to wine. So think of that as to their food as well. Okay. The laws are really strict, and with inflation the way it is, the laws make it very prohibitive to do what they need to do in order to make money.
Got you.
Looking for somewhere to advertise? Consider the Swirl Suite podcast. Yep, right here. The Swirl Suite is now open for pre-roll advertisements, mid-roll advertisements, or post-roll advertisements. Some of our packages even include a social media shout-out. If you're interested in sponsoring one episode or perhaps more, simply email us at swirlsuite@gmail.com. Cheers. Welcome to the Swirl Suite. We're so happy to have you.
I am so happy to be here with you.
For those who don't know who you are 100 of the most influential people in the U.S. You're an Emmy winner, you're an author, and you are the author of one of the most referenced wine books that we study from. And I read that you didn't write this book because you wanted to make money. Is that true?
Not only did I not write it to make money, I was pretty convinced that I would not make any money because, you know, first of all, books don't sell very well. And I thought, I only have like 25 friends who I can, you know, insist that they buy a book. How am I ever going to make any money from it? But, you know, I didn't write the Wine Bible, as you point out, for that reason. I wrote it because I wished it was the book that I had when I was learning about wine, and also because at the time, the first edition came out in 2001. At the time, all of the big books were written by British men, and in a certain sense, they were very classist. These were, for the most part, wealthy men who had gone to Oxford or Cambridge. And the Wine Bible was very different. It was the first big book by an American author and by a woman and by someone who, wasn't on the wine debate team at Oxford. So it had a different point of view of the Wine Bible. And I think that's part of its success.
So I also read that it took you 10 years for the first edition, 5 years for the second edition. How long did it take for the third edition? And congratulations on that, by the way.
Yes, thank you. The third edition came out last year and it only took about 4.5 years. So I'm getting really fast now, just blasting through the world.
Well, I have two questions. One, did you just love writing? Because your wine Bible is so comprehensive and so detailed. And I was just for as a wine lover, I'm saying, well, God, do I have to be a prolific writer like this as well to, a researcher to put something together like this? What was the impetus and all that good stuff behind such a detailed now Bible, wine Bible?
There are a lot of subject experts in wine. There are a lot of people who know wine very well. But there are not a lot of people who are also excellent writers about wine. And for me, I work as hard at being a good writer as I do at knowing wine. And I really am a kind of tireless researcher. You can see if you read the Wine Bible, it's full of crazy, very technical things, but also really crazy things. How many sheep are there for every winemaker in New Zealand? That's the kind of thing I will know. Because what makes wine fascinating is, of course, all the history and culture and food and lifestyle and all the things that surround it. I have to know a lot about wine, but I feel it's important for wine writers to also be really good writers, because otherwise wine can be deathly. It can be, if you just do gray page after gray page of the DOC laws in Italy, you could go brain dead from that.
So the second question was, why the name Wine Bible? Because that could be kind of controversial for some religious sects. So why the name Wine Bible?
Yeah. Well, the very first edition that took 10 years, I was supposed to have the manuscript done in 1 year. And after the when that 1 year was up, my publisher called me and he said, "Okay, where is it?" And I said, "Well, it's not quite done." And in point of fact, it wasn't even anywhere near done, right? Because it kept getting bigger and bigger. I was writing now a book that I hadn't truly envisioned in the very beginning. It was envisioned as a really simple book in the beginning. So anyway, 8 years of this go on, and finally, and every 8 years, my publisher calls me once a year and he says, "Promise me you're not in your pajamas, like doing nothing." And I said, "No, I promise you, I really am working on it, but it's a bigger book than you and I talked about, Peter." So anyway, year eight comes along and I assemble all the chapters, and with great trepidation, because remember, I'd missed eight deadlines, I go down to his office. And I'm sitting in front of him, completely silent, while he looks through the manuscript. And after about 40 minutes, he looks up and he says, "It's terrific. And we'll call it the Wine Bible."
Wow.
And I said, "Absolutely not." Then I said, like, what do you mean? Absolutely not. And I said, well, first of all, two things. One is that's a big statement, right? That's a kind of, I mean, for me, there was almost too much ego there. I thought, I can't say that. And number two, I was worried, like, I don't know, I have a lot of Jewish friends. What if that doesn't ring right for them? So anyway, he said to me, well, apparently you didn't read your contract very well because, and this is true, when you write a book, you actually have no say over a book's title. You are considered a subject expert, so everything between the covers is yours, but a book's title is considered part of its marketing. And so Peter said to me, I trusted you for all these 8 years, and now you have to trust me because I really am, he's saying this, I am a marketing expert, and we're calling this the Wine Bible. And he was right.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow.
Wait. Do you know if it's the same thing for like TV and movies? Is it similar?
I think it probably is similar because, the title of something is really critically important. And just because you know your field well does not mean that you understand the marketing of that thing. I mean, I think I understand a lot more about wine book marketing today than I did 20 years ago. But still, Workman Publishing had published hundreds and tens of thousands of books. They know a good title when they hear one.
Wow. So you made a shift to the digital platform. Tell us all about how that happened and tell us about WineSpeak.
Yeah. So a few years ago, I was when, all of a sudden there were like a lot of wine blogs, it went from one or two to like 100 in 1 year. And I was, of course, known for the Wine Bible, which is big and authoritative and takes massive amounts of research. And I would read all these blogs, and some of which would be really great, but some of them, were obviously written really quickly. Nobody checked their facts, and people would just say whatever they wanted to say. And I would be like infuriated. I'd be like, no, wait, that's not right. And I thought, okay, don't complain, just get in that pool too. So I thought, all right, I'm going to start writing something that in a sense is the complete opposite of the Wine Bible. It'll be digital. It'll be really fast. It'll be super fun. Well, I think the Wine Bible is fun too, but it will be something that comes out weekly, but it will have behind it the research and the authority of that I brought to the Wine Bible. And so WineSpeak was born, and as you know, it's super fun. There's a wine quiz every week. There's lots of fascinating facts. There are some wine recommendations. There are things you can vote on. There are videos. And you can read the whole thing in the time it takes to open a bottle of wine. And it's been hugely successful. We have an 80% open rate, which is very good in digital media.
So I guess you kind of answered this question already, but like, what parts of the Wine Bible did you bring to WineSpeak? And you kind of answered that already where you said the authoritative part of the facts, the factual part about your writing.
What makes wine endlessly fascinating are so many of the stories that surround wine. And I've been to almost every wine region in the world. I have not been to the Balkans, sorry, Bulgaria and Romania. I have not been there yet. But when you have those stories, when you've got, thousands of notebooks full of the way wine is lived in various cultures around the world, then you know, I can use snippets from all of that to help populate the to help populate Wine Speed. But then, of course, it's very contemporary too, because the boxes you see behind me are wines waiting to be tasted, not only those, lots of others that way. And so, you know, we taste about 2,000 wines a year here in my office, and we of those, we write about only the ones we think are the most extraordinary. They don't have to be the most expensive, but every wine we write about is just fantastic. And that's different than what a critic does, because critics write about every wine they taste. And you know, they'll give some wines a bad score and some wines a great score. I feel like as a writer, nobody needs to know about wines they shouldn't buy. You know, what you really want to know about is wines you should buy. So we do a lot of tasting in order to sort of bring you what we think is worthy of your buying and tasting, whether it costs $18 or $80.
I just wanted to follow up on that. Because I think we all have our own biases about or a bias about what we enjoy. And when you're tasting wines and you decide, well, this isn't something that I would drink, but I think it's a well-crafted wine, how do you make the determination or what goes into that thought process?
Yeah, you're so right, because in the beginning, when you're getting to know a region, pretty much all of your reactions are subjective, right? Because if this is only the, let's say, the fifth Argentine Malbec you've ever tasted, then you're in the I like it, I don't like it phase. But eventually, when you become not you obviously, but when one becomes a pro, part of being a pro is that you've hit that baseball so many times that you know what constitutes great Argentine Malbec, even if you don't like it. So, you know, I try and be as objective as I can and talk about style. So that a good example would be, you know, I probably for myself would never buy a super oaky, buttery Chardonnay. But I also know that super oaky, buttery Chardonnays have a big market. Lots of people love them. And so I have to, you know, put myself over here, put myself to the side, and think about whether or not this wine in front of me is a beautiful example of that, is a beautiful example of that style. But it does presuppose that you've tasted a lot of a given style, because the first few times you taste anything, you know, I don't know, a Croatian wine, you all you can have is a subjective reaction. A lot of tasting experience is key, but I've tasted at least 2,000 wines a year for 30 years now. So I'm, I feel like I have my feet under me, so to speak.
Do you solicit? I'm assuming you don't at this point. You know, if you're tasting 2,000 wines for 30 years, you're never parched. But do you solicit specific winemakers, or how does the process work? If we have some budding winemakers out there and they want to land in your office, what do they do?
Yeah. So people send us wines, you know, all the time. Wine producers usually have a kind of media list, and it's divided into, you know, the top 10 people and then the next 10 people and the next 10 people. And depending on their production or what they think they might want you to experience, they may just send you unsolicited wine. So there's that. Some wine comes in every day into this office that we have not asked for, but we might find really interesting. And then we have our kind of feelers out. We know a lot of people around the world, and so we often ask. We'll say, we want to write about rosés from Provence, France, and I know you, Mr. Importer, have this one. Can you send us a sample? And then for wines that we are either not sent a sample of or we can't request a sample, we go out and buy. So all three of those processes are kind of at work all the time.
So I have a question about how you taste. We've actually heard you speak before, and you said you'd like to taste in silence. Also, I've read that you think that people should taste in a specific way if they're trying to learn a wine. So I'm not sure if that meant if you think we should taste by region and like sip a certain region, a certain amount of time or a specific grape. How do you suggest that we taste?
Well, in the old days, I, like almost everyone, was sort of the historic way of tasting is, you look at the color, then you smell the wine, then you taste it, you have to hold it on your palate for a few seconds, and then you think about the finish. But I don't do that anymore. I actually don't think a lot of people do it that way either. It's much more instinctive when you taste something to immediately think about the taste. You can think about, you don't have to do it in this, smell, aroma, taste order. And for me, the very first thing I think about now is this wine alive? Is this wine bursting with energy? Does this wine have something to say? Do I feel like it has some vitality? Or do I feel like this is just sort of a dull wine just sitting in the glass without very much to say? And so that's almost always the first note that I write to myself. But you might be asking a slightly different question, which is how to use tasting to learn about wine. Because, of course, people say, and it's true, how do you learn about wine? You have to taste a lot. Well, the problem with that, in a way, is whether it's by looking at something like wine.com, where you're looking on a screen, or if you're in a retail store, here are 700 wines. How do you know, right? So, for that, what I always suggest is, and I used to do this myself as a young journalist, is choose any region in the world. It doesn't matter. You could choose New Zealand, choose Spain, doesn't matter. But only ever buy wine from that one place for like 2 months. Just every wine you buy, it's a Spanish wine. And don't pay attention to anything else. And at the end of that 2 months, you'll realize if, let's say, you bought 2 bottles a week, you'll realize, oh, you actually have a sense of Spanish wine. You have a sense of that flavor. You might not be an expert yet, but you're like, wow, I know what to expect kind of now. I have a good feel for this. And then move on to another region, Chianti or Hungary, any place. But if every night or a few times a week you're changing, like, oh, an Italian Pinot Grigio, followed by a Sherry, followed by a Cabernet from Chile, followed by something from Santa Barbara, when you're a beginner, you can't take in all of that. Your mind can't begin to see tapestries of flavor. So by kind of controlling your environment of tasting, at least, I mean, I did this myself for years because I'm essentially self-taught, and I am self-taught. And that was really helpful in, I gave myself 2 years to go around the world. I mean, I always went to the same retail store, so I wasn't yet going around the world, but I was going around the world in taste, one place at a time.
I love that so much because I think that when people see us in wine, they assume that we've traveled the world. And that's really not true. I am one of those people who are is not as well traveled as some wine professionals. So this is a great way to like continue learning about different regions. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and you know what, Sarita, what we did, what I did originally, this was with a boyfriend long ago, but anyway, you know, we would make like a whole night of it. We would taste whatever, let's say Chiantis, and then we would make some traditional dish from Tuscany, so we would also cook that food, and just to sort of underscore the, like, get the full taste flavor in our minds. So it can be really fun to do. You can do it, you know, with a partner, with a small group of friends, and keep the food in that culture too for some period of time.
I appreciate the fact that you admittedly say that you are self-taught. I think in the industry, we get caught up in how many certifications we have by our name. Are you a sommelier? Not a sommelier. Oh my God, clutch my pearls. And I have met more than my share of people who have a lot of certifications, but have very shallow wine knowledge. And I think tasting, as you said before, is the best way to do it. And I love your example, as Sarita said, it's fun, right? Like you're learning, but you can't talk about a Spanish region and not taste the wines. Like just reading what you read in the book, it doesn't carry all of the same weight. It's helpful, but you have to experience the wines.
Yeah, I have no degrees. I don't have a degree in writing. I don't have a degree in wine. I'm not a sommelier, but I've taught a lot of sommeliers, and everybody who works for me has a degree. They have more degrees than me. But you can be, part of that is because I'm the age that I am. When I began the Master Sommelier and Master of Wine organizations were not yet in the United States. And I suppose I could go back and get a degree, but one thing I would caution, I mean, a lot of people today, when we go to hire someone, for example, when we look at resumes, almost everybody has, you know, WSET level 2 or level 3 or level 4 on their resume if they're hoping to get a wine job. And I think WSET, the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, which comes out of London, has done the world a huge, great service in raising the general educational level about wine. At the same time, the danger of that is that it's also taught everybody to think the same way, in a very predictable way. Use the same process, think the same thing. You know, right now in the world, there are many of the people who I would consider to be the best thinkers about wine have no degree in wine. They don't have an MW. They are self-taught. And because they're self-taught, maybe, they've also allowed their brains to be creative about wine, to think about wine in creative ways. So I would just caution people who have degrees. I'm happy you have a degree, but don't let that degree completely define how you think about wine, because that would be a shame and that wouldn't be right.
One, how do subscribers sign up for WineSpeed? And in a recent podcast, you said that you received 324 rejections before becoming a wine writer. What advice would you give someone who feels they are not seen in this industry?
The moral of that story is don't give up, right? I mean, that's a whole lot of a rejection. I could have given up. But, you know, You can't. You just can't give up, right? You just have to, every block, roadblock, you just have to learn to walk around and not let it stop you. And I don't know how you get the courage to do that, but you do have to. Each of us has to. We have to as women. You have to as Black women in particular. I think for me, when I, one of the barriers when I was a young journalist was that I didn't have any money, and wine is expensive. So there are all kinds of blockades, but if you keep thinking about them, you really will get blocked by them. You almost have to ignore them. And for me, I certainly have done that. I can't tell you how many times I've been the only woman in the room, especially years ago when there were maybe five women journalists in the whole country. Yeah, you, and that's the same for writing. It was hard to break into writing before. There was no such thing as blogs. You couldn't just decide to write your own, whatever you yourself wanted. So 324 rejection slips. Luckily, I mean, my 325th piece sold and I got paid $30. So I was super happy. Oh, I just see this just fell down. But and then for Wine Speed, it's really easy. It's just two words. It's one word, wine and speed, but put together as one word. So people can sign up by just going to winespeed.com. It is super fun. Every week there's a wine quiz, which will just keep you on your toes, learning about wine every week. And it comes automatically to your inbox, Wine Speed does, every Friday. So yeah, it's super fun. And I hope some of your listeners will give it a try.
And some of us as well. I have
Yes.
a question. Just want to go back to dig just a little bit deeper in the when you talked about rejection. Can you, if this is something that you can answer that you remember, what made you so convinced that this was what you were supposed to do? And I'm saying that from a standpoint of, like, I know me, if I get 100 rejections, I'll think like, well, maybe this isn't what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to do something else, or maybe do it in a different way. But what convinced you, like, this is it? I know I'm, this is what I'm supposed to do. Let me just push forward.
No, you know, in the same way that sometimes you do realize, wait a minute, the universe is sending me a signal here. I should not be doing this. I just knew about myself that, you know, if someone put me down in Fiji tomorrow, the even if I knew nothing about Fiji, I would walk around and within a week I'd be writing a book on the history of Fiji or something. I just was a writer. And even though I had no degree in writing, I loved words. I still love words. So I don't know. And I also think though, you know, rejection is very powerful and it can make you give up before you really should, because maybe you do just say to yourself, hey, you know, the universe is telling me something here. I don't know. I don't give up that easily. I have to re I maybe I'm stubborn, but I just don't give up that easily.
And it also sounds like you just had, I mean, you were confident in yourself and your abilities. And so that made you kind of just keep going.
I don't know. I don't know that I was. I didn't have any reason to be confident. I wasn't getting any big reinforcement from anybody saying, yeah, you know what? You are really good. But, you know, it is the kind of puzzle, it's the conundrum of, again, starting out. You just have to keep going. You have to take the rejection. You have to find a way to end run around it. And then I don't know if it's not to be, then it better be a whole hell of a lot of rejection, before I'm ready to give up on something, even if I'm not, well, in the beginning, here's the irony of wine. In the beginning, you don't know how much you don't know. If I realized how much I didn't know, I might, in fact, have stopped, because it's only the more you get into it that you think, oh, holy God, there's a lot of stuff here to know, right? So it's kind of a blessing to be naive in the beginning.
For sure.
And then as you keep going, you develop your confidence over time. So I think, confidence doesn't, I don't think I started out with a lot of confidence. But now after the Wine Bible and after selling almost a million copies, now I'm a little more confident.
Right, just a little, just a little.
Love
Thank
that.
you so much for sharing that, because I think us as women, oftentimes we may give up too quickly or not necessarily be convinced of our own abilities, or we don't push hard enough, push long enough. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, no, totally. I completely agree.
I mean, I don't want to get into how the industry makes us feel sometimes, but you have to have really thick skin to be a woman, especially be a minority in this industry. So, yeah.
Listen, I've been in tastings
Thank
where even today I'm in some tasting and some guy will literally elbow me out of the way, or a producer will pour me a much smaller taste than they pour the man next to me. And
Oh,
I
the baby
sometimes,
taste.
yeah, I've written about that a few times because chances are I might be a whole lot more important to that producer than the big guy standing next to me. But again, I'm like, I'm gonna ignore this. I'm gonna ignore this because in the end, quality will win out. In the end, people who are good, I believe, will come to the fore. So I'm not gonna waste too much karmic energy getting crazed by these people who are, ignorant, really. I'm just gonna keep going.
Thank you for being so genuine. It's really coming across. And sometimes, even as podcasters, we have some guests that that genuine spirit and the free sharing of knowledge and the reality of what's really happening out on the ground doesn't come across. So again, thank you. I truly appreciate it as well.
You're welcome. All right, ladies. Well, keep going, right? In the spirit of that,
Yeah.
I'm giving you a thumbs up. Keep going. And it's been really a pleasure to talk with all of you today. Thanks.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well. Tell
Okay,
everybody
thank
where
you.
they can follow you and where they can find out more about WineSpeed and sign up.
Yes, you can go to www.winespeed.com or www.karenmacneil.com, and all of our social media is at Karen McNeil Co. Co. at Karen McNeil Co. Yeah, join us. We have a lot of good wine content that we're always sharing, and we'd love to share with all of your listeners as well. So, all right, ladies, thank you. I'm off to taste
Fantastic.
some wine.
All right. Thank you so
Have
much. Have a good
fun.
night.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank
Keep
you.
going. Okay.
Okay.
Are we recording a catch up or are we talking about future plans? What's happening? Just
Oh,
let me
no,
know. So, do
we
I need to be
can.
on this part or do I need to go to bed? I'm just trying to gauge my level of
Oh my gosh.
participation.
Tanisha, what's going on in Paris? What have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Working, ran around with two college tour groups today, and did the tasting. And then I have a tour group tomorrow. The weekend was chill. The weather has not been great. Today was nice, but it's been rainy and cloudy.
But yeah, enjoying my last few moments of quote unquote freedom before classes start at the end of the month.
Nice. And when you say college tours, you're just walking them around Paris and
And
like
then
talk
we'll
to
go to
people.
a place and do a wine tasting. Yeah. They'll have like a itinerary of things that they have to do. Like one group was Black Americans in France, so clearly they needed to talk to me. And then another group was international business and global marketing. So we went to this startup co-working space. And then they had another guy come talk to them, but I left them for that part because they were doing that at their hotel. I'm like, well, you don't need me for this. So yeah, that's it. And then a walking tour for them. That's all.
Very cool. It's like, I don't want, I'm a knock on wood, but it seems like winter is just like come to a close already.
No, it's not.
It's not, it's in
No.
the 60s all week.
It's gonna
Drop again.
the temperature's gonna drop again.
All right. Well,
And it'll be rainy all weekend.
see, this is how we be having problems in the vineyards. This little blast of warm air, stuff starts budding, and then it gets cold again, and then it snaps, and then we have problems and grapes don't grow.
That's
But
why they
I
have
keep
that
pretending
big
to
green thing.
be
What's that green thing called?
which one? The fan? Not the fan.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
it creates heat
Lower.
in
Yeah.
the, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, they have
I don't
that
know what
in
it's
America.
called.
They don't.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah,
Oh,
they don't really allow
I have
that
a
here.
short
They
dog
have them
story. I have a short
here.
dog story.
The
So,
story is short or the dog is short?
well, shit, both, honestly. So yesterday, me and Alan were running errands and we got back home. I don't know, like 1 o'clock. I came in because I don't know if y'all had Roman Rooster before, but Roman Rooster is the chicken spot in DC. Best fried
Yes.
chicken ever, best chicken sandwiches ever. And they serve breakfast. Okay. You can
Do
now they
they?
got they now they got turkey sausage. Okay. Anyway, I'm excited about this breakfast sandwich. I'm unwrapping my sandwich in the house. Alan is still at the car. And he was calling me. I was like, what is happening? I'm about to dig into the sandwich. What's going on? I go outside. And he was like, this dog walked on me. I was like, what do you mean a dog walked up on you? He was like, no, this dog walked. And he pulled the dog in the gate and it's this tiny, tiny little dog. And I was like, oh, what is going, what? Anyway, this dog smells really clean. The paws are soft. Like this dog came from somewhere, somebody's house. And just wandering the streets. It has a collar, but no tag. So anyway, we bring the dog inside. And it's like a show. We're just staring at this dog, like, what were we as if we're not dog people, but it's like, you ain't our dog. Like, what are we about to do?
Really got a new
Anyway,
dog.
so he was going to a Caps game. So I took the dog to the Human Rescue Alliance. And they were like, yeah, there's no chip. We don't know who this dog belongs to. Yeah, but it's really well groomed. It's clean. So, they took down my information and they were like, "You want to, keep her until they call or figure out she's gone?" I was like, "Yeah, I can't imagine her being in
On the street.
shelter, so
Yes.
in the street." So
No.
anyway, yeah. So right now we have
So
this.
Sarita got a new dog.
You
What's
have a
the name?
dog?
What's her name,
What kind of
Sarita?
dog is?
I don't know if we have a dog yet, but
Sarita got a dog. Well,
she
can
is
we
very,
see her?
yes.
It's a blessing.
Let me see if
What
I can.
kind is it?
She looks like she might be a mix between like a Yorkie and a Dash.
Oh.
Oh, can you, oh wait. Can you,
Oh, ah,
let me turn
she's
my
cute.
blur off. My room is very
Right. I'm like,
good.
ma'am, you got the
All
blur
right.
on. Like,
Okay.
what are you doing?
Wait. Well, okay. She's very soft.
Oh,
Yeah.
you're not
She's
giving
super
that doll
soft.
back.
Oh, God.
What you gonna name her? Is it a
Jumbo.
her or he?
It's a her. It's a her.
Girl,
She's very cute.
you saying that like you're forgetting you're talking to me. You saying that like, oh, it's a her. Like, what? I don't know,
And
girl.
no flyers have been put up in the neighborhood or
Oh,
anything like
girl, it's a
that.
black neighborhood. I don't know if they do that around here. I don't know. And Alan was like, should we put up flyers? But he was like, I don't want somebody to claim this dog that's not theirs.
Because then they will sell it for the money.
So yeah, we're just keeping this dog until somebody
So what you
uses it.
think about naming her your new dog?
Well, at the shelter, they said she looked like Chewbacca because of her wild hair. So we've been calling her Chewy.
Oh, cute.
So, okay, thank you. I'm not going to say that whole thing. Chewbacca.
Wow.
That's cute.
Well, yeah, that is cute.
Well, thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, either somebody is totally upset that they can't find their dog, or they turned the dog loose on purpose because they couldn't take care of it anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah, pretty much.
Because if you ain't looking for this dog and it's been 24 hours.
Right.
And
you're not out, like, in the street screaming.
Human Rescue is New York Avenue. That's 10 minutes from here. You ain't even gone up there.
So. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they don't have a chip. No chip, no.
Right.
I have to agree with Glennis. Like,
they were like, we can't take this dog with us overseas or whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. But in the other piece is, these jokers around here put they lost cats, dogs, mice, all that on the ring. Every time. Ring. Lost cat, lost dog, lost alpaca. Like, God. All these lost cats.
Lost alpacas.
Yeah.
They put a where?
On the ring, the ring.
Our ring. It's like it's like a ring neighborhood notification. Yeah. Like,
the neighborhood
emergency alerts.
Yeah.
All type of things. And I swear, everybody's animals. I was like, well, y'all know how to keep y'all animals locked up. But anyway.
No, all the animals running away because they horrible people.
Ain't acting up. They ain't acting right. Yeah, this is true.
Leslie, any announcements?
Actually, we are looking for vendors for our brunch in Baltimore. So if you have, you know, some wares that you were interested in selling, like jewelry or makeup, or you're an artist, please hit me up because we'd love to have you.
That is a wrap, everybody. Cheers.
Thank you.
See y'all in 2-3 weeks.
Yep.
4 weeks.
You've been listening to the Swirl Sweet Podcast, a part of the Alive Podcast Network. This episode has been edited and produced by Vine Me Up Media.